You're listening to the USCA official podcast, which takes you behind the scenes of eventing, covering all the big events, professional tips and tricks, interviews, special guests, and the latest USCA eventing news. Welcome to the official USCA podcast, and it is episode number 250. I can't believe that it is 250 episodes since the podcast started, and it is a refreshed USCA official podcast. I'm going to introduce my guests. I'm firstly Nicole Brown. I am an equestrian commentator and presenter, and I am joined on this episode by Dan Byrne, who has been a guest on the USCA podcast before, director of Equ Ratings. Dan, good to have you with us.
Hello again, Nicole. We meet in a new circumstances this time. So yeah, good to be here. Delighted to be part of this.
I am so unbelievably excited about this project.
Yeah, that is something. Actually, we might as well just get this out of the way in the first 1 minute of the 250th episode. I am so unbelievably excited is something that Nicole says, I would say minimum four times a show, let alone a month. So prepare yourselves, listeners.
Basically true. Keeping us in line, we have two very special guests with us. Rob Burke, CEO of the USCA.
Hi, guys. Welcome, or thanks for having me. I don't know how to say it, right? Because I guess it's our podcast, but we're now in the Equ Ratings Media Empire.
Media Empire, Dan. I like the sound of that.
Yeah, absolutely never been described like that before. So thank you.
There's a first for everything. Rob, we're delighted to have you with us. And we are also joined by President of the USCA, Max Corcoran.
Hello, everybody.
Now, Max, we're especially pleased that you are with us because you are actually in Wellington at the moment working very hard.
I am. I'm actually just getting my horse sorted and my rider on for this weekend here. And trying to keep things moving, working and moving.
How'd your braids come out, Max?
Not yet. I haven't braided yet because that's what I have to get off to do. So later on, try to getting ready for the pre-ride right now and then getting them on for the class a little bit later.
To be honest, you're a far better multitasker than me. That is pretty impressive. So if you hear any background noise, it is down on the ground in Wellington. But Max, yep. Rob, very, very delighted to have you with us. Now, because this is a sort of a refreshed podcast, it has a new look for a new decade. It's probably a good chance to first of all talk about what is in store for you, our lovely, lovely listeners. So we're going to have everything from the big events, special guests, and actually there will be a very special guest coming later on in the show, professional tips and tricks. There will be interviews. Of course, you'll keep up to date with all of the USCA news, and it'll be plenty of fun as well. So we are delighted to have you along for the ride. Rob, it's probably an important point of the USCA that actually this podcast is about openness of the association, isn't it? It's the chance for the listeners to have their say too.
Absolutely, Nicole. Yeah, I mean, it's, I think we don't just want to sit here and talk about our opinions and what's going on. We want to essentially answer and talk to our members directly. And you guys have done a fabulous job with your podcast on having kind of, you know, surveys of the listeners. And we'd really love to embrace that and make it something people really want to listen to, honestly.
So listeners, if you want to get involved, you can send in any questions that you have, get in touch on social media, any ideas that you have, anything that you would like to see, we would love to hear from you. Now, it's a bit of an icebreaker because actually, Derm and I know each other pretty well, but it's a new team, so I think we ought to get to know each other a little bit. A fun fact about each of us, I struggle to find anything fun about myself because I'm an absolute sort of geek that loves eventing and spend most of my time on eventing. I find that very fun. But Derm, I'm going to start with you.
Of course you are. Of course you're going to start with me. Equally, I laughed when I saw your WhatsApp to me saying, make sure you find an interesting fact about yourself. I thought, what a way to start. I used to be a lawyer once upon a time, and then I have ended up working in EcoRatings. I set this up with Sam Watson, Irish event writer, about 5 or 6 years ago. And I have never really ridden a horse. I have ended up working with 7 or 8 Olympic teams, worked on commentary at lots of major events, you know, helped manage risk in lots of big federations, including with you, Rob. And the interesting bit is, yeah, I can't ride at all. So I think that's probably let's get that out of the way early. I think I bring,
you yeah, I bring something a different on the beach.
Yeah, I did. I did. I'm not able really to ride them, but what I have a lot of people around me all of the time, mainly people, well, in the office and outside the office, who are obsessed with eventing and do ride all of the time. And I think my role in that then is to try and be able to step back from it and see if there's things from other sports we can bring to it to help people learn or to train. If there's things from other sports that people are doing to measure progress. So I'm obsessed with eventing. I love eventing. I'm at all of the events. I talk about it all of the time, but I don't ride.
That's one of my favorite things, honestly, about you, D, is that you are a true, tried and true fan without being an expert rider. But I am surprised Watson hasn't gotten you up on a horse once or twice.
You see, all their horses are all kind of top horses. It's the thing. Like when I go and ask, you know, the only chance maybe I could get up there, you know, everyone's like, these are sharp athletes that are ready for action. Like under no circumstances are you going to sit on them.
He uses this as an excuse. I am sure we are trying to get Dan back on a horse. We would find him a horse, but he's resisting.
He's resisting. No, I'm ready.
Rob, how about you?
Well, I did grow up eventing. I grew up eventing on the West Coast, though, in California. So the strange thing for me is a lot of people out here on the East Coast don't really know me growing up as a horseman. So that's been one of the hardest things for me to get used to is kind of administrator, not horseman. But yeah, I mean, I'm a father first and foremost, 2 kids, you know, that I got off to school this morning with my wife. Interesting stuff. I'm an enormous geek, like serious nerd and geek. And luckily sometime around 20 or 30 years ago, that became somewhat acceptable. So
you're in the right place, Rob. You're among friends here.
Yeah. I worked for about, before I took this job with the USCA, I worked for about 15 years, actually in pretty high level positions in federal and state government. So I really got burned out in the government setting and was lucky that the U.S. Eventing Association bailed me out and gave me a purpose in life. So, yeah,
that's cool. I didn't know that. That's cool. I felt the same when I was leaving law. I had 5 years in like a really top corporate law firm and I only had 5 of them. And I was like, oh, I will absolutely not be able to do this for my whole life. Yeah, and eventing generally bailed me out. Yeah, poor Max is on with all of the nerds.
She is the coolest one amongst
them. I'm a nerd too, so don't worry about it. I'm not not going to be shy about that as well.
We can make it cool.
It all depends on it's all relative, isn't it?
It is, exactly. And I think, well, first of all, I found out a really interesting fact about you, Max, which I didn't know and I just think is blooming brilliant. You're president of the USCA, and actually, it runs in the family.
Yes, I guess so. My great-grandfather, Grover Cleveland, you know, as I joke, cause he died in 1908, so it was many, many years ago, but he was the president of the U.S. for 22nd and 24th president.
That's actually amazing.
That shut everybody up.
I know.
I don't think so. As I said, we were real close.
Well, it's still pretty cool family history to have.
Oh, it is. No, it actually is very, very cool. It is very cool. And it's, there's some neat memorabilia sort of our family has. Grover had 5 children, but 4 that lived. And then my mom is 1 of 6. So we have a massive family. So it's, it is funny when we all get together.
I bet it's good fun.
It is.
Nicole, if that was you, that would be like you being a part of the royal family. You'd be a princess, Nicole.
Yeah.
You're a princess, Nicole, if that was
I wish. I mean, yes, that's no. But I could, no. However far down I dig, there will never be those family trees that are unearthed. Max, in terms of your sort of background in the sport, tell us a bit about it, because you have been involved in eventing at the absolute heart of it for a good number of years. I'm not going to go into how many years. You have so much experience.
No, I mean, I grew up fox hunting when I was a kid up in Massachusetts, and then got introduced to the sport. Bobby Costello, who rode for the U.S. in 2000, sort of, we rode at the same barn, and he would take me around to the events when I was a kid, and then it just sort of stuck. I've got a totally non-horse family, so he was great, took me around, and then from there it just sort of became an addiction. I just love the horses. I love looking after them. I rode, I competed a little bit, but not much. It really wasn't for me. I wasn't really brave enough, quite honestly, to do the jumping part. And then I got lucky to end up where I ended up at the working for my friend Jim Stamets, and then carrying on to the O'Connor event team, and got to do that for 11 years, which was pretty wild. And then even then, I've been able to continue traveling, freelancing to a lot of the top competitions and Olympics and World Championships and all that other stuff too. So it's been, I've been pretty lucky, quite honestly, to have been able to sort of get to the big competitions, not necessarily on a horse, but just looking after them.
It's quite an incredible journey to being president now. What would you like to come out of your presidency?
Well, see, poor people are going to be really sick of hearing this, but my main thing is I want to get better horsemanship, better horse management into the USDA or all horse sport in general in America. It's something that, you know, it's lacking. I think people are so quick to for the instant gratification part of it. They just, you know, going to buy a new horse or, you know, inject it with something or feed it something different and it's going to make it better, but it doesn't work that way. Horses are going to humble you pretty quickly, aren't they?
They do have a habit of it. They definitely do.
Yeah.
We've all been brought back down to earth a time or two by that.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. That probably leads us on quite nicely to our first point. So what we thought we'd talk about on this podcast, because obviously it is talking about what is in store with the podcast. It's giving you guys listening at home the chance to send in anything that you would like to hear about, anything you would like to hear, anybody you would like to hear from, all of those sorts of things. And we thought we'd pick a few of the key points of 2020 and what to look out for. And actually, that probably leads us on quite nicely to the USDA Symposium, which runs the 17th through to the 20th of February, led by the German Olympic medalist Andreas Dabowski this year. And tickets are still available, aren't they, Rob? So if anybody wants to go, how do they go about doing so?
Yeah, if they go onto our website, useventing.com, they can pull up through the link to the symposium that's right there on the main page. They can pull up the an application to attend. And honestly, we're going to be taking those right up until it runs. In addition, people can go on our website at useventing.com and find the application to attend. I mean, it's open to anyone, you know. And in addition to the ICP, we're going to run sessions for the young event horse and the future event horse. People have an interest in identifying, what makes a potential upper level event horse, you know, work, make them special, make them a horse that can make it to Kentucky or badminton or one of the big ones. So. It's a great, like Max said, it's been going for a few years now, and it's a great opportunity. And actually, I haven't been for a couple of years, and I'm going this year, so I'm personally kind of excited.
It's an amazing opportunity, and Andreas Dabowski is a German eventing legend. He has been an absolute stalwart of German eventing for many, many years. Is always at the forefront of their selectors' minds and will no doubt be looking to sort of pass on some of his knowledge as well of European eventing. Next one, and I'm going to come to you on this one, Rob, because Twin Rivers is hosting a new four-star long this year, which actually gives the West Coast riders their first ever spring event at this level. You grew up eventing on the West Coast. That is a pretty big deal for eventing over there.
It is. And, you know, California and the Western United States in general, I think growing up, we kind of felt like the ugly stepchildren. And at some point, I will say that these days there is a thriving eventing community out there. You know, some spectacular events, and the fact that Twin Rivers is willing to invest in putting on this spring long four-star just is a perfect kickoff for the folks who are going to travel to Kentucky and elsewhere throughout the year. Because in the past, a lot of the California eventers have had to, you know, it's probably worse than going from England or Ireland over to the continent. I mean, they had to travel all the way across the United States to do these prep runs, which was taxing on their horses. I mean, Max knows all about that. And for, you know, I'm a strong believer that you should develop in the environment that you grew into. So if you make it to the upper levels kind of in California or wherever, I'm a strong believer that you should be able to stay there and have a path to go to the top of the sport. And so, you know, the folks at Twin Rivers, Andrea Baxter, Connie Baxter, they've really stepped up. This is amazing.
I will say, though, those West Coasters have come east almost every big national three-day, and have kicked our butt. So I'm they can stay over there. It's fine. Between, you know, between Frankie Suits and I just feel like they keep coming across and taking names and going back home again. Thanks for coming out, guys. Yeah.
Thanks for coming. Now head back to the West Coast.
Yeah, I think, Nicole, I'm sure we're going to talk about Fairhill and what having a second five-star in the U.S. is going to mean. But I think having another four-star long, and, you know, Rob's mentioned that geographical importance. I think, you know, four area six generally, it's just a really, it's probably as important, you know, as Fairhill is going to be from a kind of a five-star landscape. Having another four-star long is a really, really big addition to people's lives over there, particularly when you're at that upper level, and that's a level that you're trying to qualify at or get MERs at, or, you know, bring horses through as you look forward to or look towards championships. It's a really big addition to the calendar, so definitely one that we're going to be covering, I'm sure, come, when's that, April?
Early 9th April? To the 12th of April.
Yeah.
And if you think of it like long term too, right? So you've got the Olympics in LA in 2028. Granted, those are the summer, but events like these could be pivotal, not only for the US, but for prep runs for other countries. I mean, it's we need this throughout the country. We need it in the middle of the country at some point too. So we're just hoping we grow to the point where that happens.
It will be a very, very welcome addition to the calendar, and I'm looking forward to covering it as well. From there, let's go to Kentucky, because I have to admit, the Land Rover Kentucky this year is going to be unbelievably exciting. It's an Olympics year, which always makes every competition, just the pressure is just piled on to everybody. Kentucky, I feel like, I think it's a bit harsh for me to go to Rob and Max on this one, but in terms of Olympic selection, riders looking to catch the selector's eye, it is going to be so important.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's so important every year, but everything takes on, you know, a greater level of importance, or certainly feels to take that on in an Olympic year. I think there's a few things about Kentucky that are worth mentioning. It's been way too long since there was a US winner. And I think
it's so true. Oh my God.
A bit harsh there, Dave.
I was like, you're inviting Europeans, like, just send them home. Send them home.
I think we should shut
the border.
See, I think you can take on the Europeans and beat them. And I think that is, look, when you look at Boyd last year, finishing sub 28.
We've come pretty close.
Yeah, it's very rare that you finish sub 28 in a five star and you're not, you know, right there. Like, obviously, he is right there, but very often that will be enough to win it. Now, we've had 2 years of Oliver Townend. This year, I think, just looking at kind of at the upper level, at the high performance level, I think there is a lot of talent which is sort of coming to a peak in the US at a really good time. Now, a lot of them are going to be going to, I guess, Kentucky will be one, and I guess then Jersey Fresh pretty soon after it, from a four-star long and from a selection point of view, is going to be really important. But in terms of Kentucky, yes, it's very big. Yes, it's very special. Yes, it's such a critical piece of the U.S. calendar. But something feels different this year. I think U.S. eventing at high performance level has a really exciting program lined up in terms of the horses which are coming through. We've come very close in terms of Boyd and Setzer like last year. I think it is really time for a US winner, and imagine the joy and the celebration, and actually not turning them away at the borders, Max, but letting all of the Europeans who want to come and beating them.
I
think it's there. Yeah. I think that's the target. That's what's happening out there in the world. And Kentucky is a really good showcase for the US in terms of showing them that actually on an unbelievable course, when you think of what Derek has delivered for the last couple of years, on an unbelievable course, all of the top level talent there, and we're going to come out on top.
Yeah, and I think it's also important for that, you know, it's a Derek DeGrazia course at Kentucky, and he's also the course designer in Tokyo, and I think that will be interesting for, you know, for some riders to potentially come and have a go at one of his courses too, because they don't look that technical, they don't look that big, and he is so good at having the one sort of random place where you can, your horse will glance off or won't read, you know, if you get caught sleeping for one nanosecond, you have a glance off. His horses are so safe. I say that touching wood, that typically there are very few horse falls on his horses. It's a sleeper. It's a sleeper track, isn't it? And you got to be awake for every last minute. I remember what Tim Price a couple years ago, there was that combination right there at the end, and he just, you know, just three from home, kept kicking, and next thing you know, he's on the ground, just because his horse glanced off and wasn't locking onto the jump. So he's a brilliant course designer, I think.
Yeah. We were talking a little bit online about the our idols growing up. Well, Derek coming out of the West Coast was one of my idols growing up in the sport, and I mean, he really is a master with his design. And I'll say, D, on your I'm really bad at predictions, but I am feeling quite good this year, probably better I've felt in a number of years about our American upper level professionals. I think like you were kind of saying, there's a lot of potential there. And just the hope is that we all line up in line, both for Kentucky and then obviously Tokyo being the big aim for us. But I'm cautiously extremely excited about our potential.
Don't say it out loud, Rob.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think that is the type of confidence. And I know that it exists at, you know, in that high performance setup, that there is that confidence there. I think when you have kind of disappointments, and there's no doubt kind of WEG 2018 would have been a disappointment, but big part of the Equiridding's role within that is to be able to separate out what is chance and what is trends and what needs to be looked at. And, you know, it is not that often that you will see something like a Boyd Martin 20 penalties at a championship. It is not that often that you will see Donner have rails down. So when you have, unfortunately, a couple of these moments of what is chance, absolutely chance, and it happens to all fall together, the key is being able to recognize that and not, you know, tear up the playbook, because the playbook is not that wrong. You know, like Ireland were really, really close to the US in terms of where they were both trending. If you look at Ireland, had a number of top tens at five stars going into the World Games. The US had a number of top fives at five star, and, you know, that's not any reflection on where the five stars are happening or where the four stars are happening. Actually, if you look at the level of results, you know, tight lines, Donner, sets her leg Z, you know, I think of what Z is doing coming through at that point. There was a top team that went to WEG 2018, a really, really impressive team. And because of the way it fell, I think it's really important not to overreact to that and to think that anything is different really going into 2020. I think it's a hugely positive group going in there. And as you said, I think Kentucky will be different. And I think the Olympics will be different.
Yeah, you guys did a great job at our annual convention. I think it was 2 or 3 years ago. Well, no, 2 years ago, because it was post-WEG, that I think a lot of us were down in the dumps coming into the convention. And we had a panel of the riders from WEG, and, you know, some of them had been publicly kind of really sad and down on performances. And then that was Sam sat up there and said, you know, guys, the Irish, we were sitting in the same position not too long ago. And now, you know, again, as the stats fell out, it was our day. But I think, like I said, I'm feeling really good this year. Super excited, Nicole, as you said, about the five star coming in the fall at Fair Hill. I think it's a great new opportunity for us. I mean, there's a lot of good things happening in the U.S. and you know, it's good to be sitting in Max's position, I imagine, and I feel good to be sitting up here and have a lot of hope going into the year. So yeah, knock on wood.
I think this year as well, with Tokyo obviously going to teams of three, every team is a little bit going into the unknown. Every team, their team tactics might be slightly different. And I think it will just build the pressure. But actually, you could have a team that goes with three very solid cross-country horses, and you'll have teams that go that perhaps are a little bit riskier. And I'm just fascinated to see how it plays out. Now, you mentioned there the new five-star at Fair Hill, the Maryland five-star. Let's talk about that for a second, because it is the first year that there is a second five-star in the US. We've talked about sort of the cost and the time taken to travel just even across the country from west to east coast. But actually, that is a massively big step in terms of giving riders another opportunity, another bite at the cherry, so to speak, of a five-star without having to travel into Europe at great expense, Rob.
Yep. No, and I'll say that the team from Maryland, the state of Maryland, really stepped up to finance and support the redevelopment of Fair Hill to make it a viable five-star location. And you know, you hit the nail on the head. We can't always pay for all of our riders to, and the riders themselves and owners can't afford to always go overseas to get these experiences. I mean, ultimately, I would love it if the international event world kind of hovered around the United States, but I get it right now that's in England. It has been for a little while now. But yeah, this just helps us take one big giant step forward. You know, there was a lot of opinions on leading into the selection of the five-star location on where it should go. But ultimately, you know, I'm fully behind this project in Maryland. And I'm not saying that because I now live here. I'm just saying it because anywhere it goes, I'm going to support. And same goes for those the long formats across the country that you were mentioning, both on the West Coast and some of the more recent ones out here on the East Coast. So, no, it's good stuff. Good stuff.
And there's
I think also too for Fair Hill too. Sorry, just to break in. I think if you think about the European horses, the British horses and the Irish horses, if they for some reason they don't get to Berlin, they still want to do a five star. Their next option is Poe. And Poe is a serious commitment of travel to get there for especially an Irish horse. If you're coming from Ireland, you got to go to England and then take the ferry over. And then it's still a 12 to 14 hour drive. Almost easier for them if they wanted to do a five star is for them to get on a plane and come to America to do their five star. It'd actually probably in the end would be less travel for those horses.
Yeah. Easy access. Really good ports out of both Philadelphia and Baltimore and elsewhere. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing how it actually progresses, because actually we don't see a new five-star on the calendar very often. You know, they're established and it's not often, but it's a big deal. So I really, really hope that it gets the support and the fans go to watch it and it becomes a real focal point of autumn eventing, or fall eventing, I should say, over in the US. The four-star long that was previously at Fair Hill is now at Morven Park at the beginning of the month. So that is still there. I think there's six four-star longs running in America next year, which is a big quantity in terms of giving riders the opportunity for qualifying results, for MER results. Let's go back in the calendar slightly. Let's talk about some of the young riders, because youth eventing is so, so strong. The North American Youth Championships being held at Rebecca Farm at the back end of July, 22nd to the 26th. Max, it's exciting times, isn't it, to give a platform for these young riders to really step up and develop for the future?
Yeah, absolutely. And Rebecca Farm does. I mean, that is one of the best events in America, or even in the world. I would rate that, and the ones that I've been to, which I've been lucky enough to go to a lot, it's probably one of the top 10 events that I've been to. These guys put on such an incredible competition. They make everybody feel welcome. And they have a 4-star long, a 4-star short, a 2-star long, a 3-star long, and a whole other competition that's happening. But they, what they do for those young riders, they make it feel so special for them. And, you know, they've got their own stabling and they have their own catering and they've got their own parties. And the Broussards put out such an incredible competition for them to really get the feel of a true championship. And these kids, they get to, you know, and it's, they've got a 2-star team, a 2-star long team, and a 3-star short team. And then the other thing they've done is to do, starting to do at Rebecca Farm, is to do a long format training level for some of the kids that are coming up. So they'll do the steeplechase and the roads and tracks, and they've put some teams together. So the kids that are sort of starting to come through the program can also go and be part of the team and get the experience of getting on a trailer and going someplace they've never been before and competing against people they've never met before and doing that. And so it's the way they've progressed it is really great. And it always is a true championship. It always comes right down to the show jumping. And it's just a great week. They do such a brilliant job there. And they, you know, they're so, it's a lot of effort and a lot of work. And you wish it could just stay there forever, but it can't.
There's a whole different pressure, isn't there? It's all very well, as you say, competing individually, but put into a team environment, all of a sudden, it becomes just that little extra bit tougher.
Yeah, and also to say you have the ability to be an individual medalist, and your other team members maybe had a 20 or somebody fell off, and your coach comes up to you and says, "Yep, you got to get this done. You just got to finish." So we still finish as a team. They got to take that. They've got to be grown up enough and selfless enough to go and to do the right things by that. And that's a life lesson, you know, when it comes to working for a corporation or something is, you know, just going ahead and getting the job done for the team.
Yep. And that's key too. I mean, development, the Young Rider Championships have been, and they've changed names a couple of times, but the Youth Championships, you know, they are so key to the development of our riders, not only, like Max said, in your just general future development, but also long-term. I mean, if you think about our team potential in the future, this is really our one big shot, or has been for a number of years, to be able to have those young riders experience what it's like to have that, the weight of the team, because it does add this whole other pressure on you. And I will say, we have to say huge thanks to the Broussard family for stepping up to host Rebecca Farm. I think a lot of people don't realize, and the kind of the back, you talk about the, what you don't see under the surface at the association or up at the USEF Federation, is that there weren't really many competitions or organizers stepping up to say they would host the championship. So the fact that the Broussards are kind enough really to, play host to it. And I'll say it's because Sarah Broussard and Jerome have a real passion for it and for the sport. And so again, they are committing gobs of money to it, and they are committing gobs of, you know, hours
and manpower and passion. And they're just amazing people.
They are amazing. And it is, you know, people say, oh, it's a bucket list event to go to the Rebecca Farm, but you know, once you go there, yeah, you've checked off your bucket list. But once you go,
you get addicted.
You never want to come home.
It's such a special place. I mean, you're at the very bottom of Glacier. You know, you're just sitting there looking at the mountains, and the nights are sort of about 45 to 50 degrees, and the morning, the daytime is about 80, and there's not a cloud in the sky, and the people are happy, and it is just a really special place. It's really cool.
I'll be honest, Max, you're selling it to me.
No, it really, I've been first time we went out there was in 2010. We flew some horses out to compete there. And I thought, I thought, how do people live in Montana in the winter? I mean, God, I mean, here I am from Massachusetts and now I live in Florida. Right. So I think it's a little silly for people to do that. And I got out there and was like, oh, so now I get it. I get it.
Now I get
totally
it.
Totally get it. Yeah. Totally all makes sense now. And it really is. The footing's amazing. They water the footing is unbelievable. The rings are great. The people are great. Just a really special place.
I think that that probably leads us on really nicely to something that I'm really passionate about. Max, I know you're really passionate about it. And that is the manpower that it takes to run our eventing system. So we talk about the generosity of the Broussard family and how much hard work goes into it. Then you've got the volunteers, the people that give up their time, the people that go behind the scenes. And quite often they're doing things that you don't necessarily see or notice. They could be on a collecting ring. They could be picking up poles. It might not always be the most glamorous job, but actually every single person is a vital, vital clog in the wheel. They're giving up their time. They're giving up, you know, essentially work. So it's costing them not only in time, but financially perhaps also, to enable events such as this to run. And it is the lifeblood of eventing, Max. And that actually, I think sometimes we need to kind of pinch ourselves and say, we're so lucky that we are all so passionate and that people will do that for our sport.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's I don't think people understand how the depth of what happens behind the scenes. People sort of show up for their competition and they don't really realize that there's a whole process that happens. There's the awareness, I think, is lacking a lot of times. People come as a spectator and they don't realize how much happens. And they come as a rider and they don't know how much happens. They come as an owner. But once you hit a little bit of the other side on the organizing side, you think, whoa, didn't realize how far back it goes. But it's, you know, you start planning for the next competition the day after the competition's ended, making lists and notes and rundowns and how you're going to make it better and all that. And the volunteers alone are magic. We can't do a competition without them.
I love one of the things you said recently, Max. You had, when you were hosting one of your events, that you had some professional riders that you got to go out and help with the show jumping, and they came back to you and said, you know, I didn't realize how many people it took to make the show jumping work.
Yeah. They said, well, I can't believe this. You've got a timer. Yes, you have a timer. And then you've got the ring. Yep, you got that. Then you have a scribe. Yes, you have that. And then you've got the in-gate. I said, yeah. Then you have a warm-up. Yep, that's how that works. Like, that's just for show jumping at Ocala. So they don't really, I think a lot of the riders don't know the magnitude of what happens. You know, they say, oh, this one didn't run very well or blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, have you stepped a foot in their shoes? No, you haven't. So I think it's really important for the riders to be able to give back. You know, everyone knows the story of, you know, Mark Todd doing bit check. He's like, well, I got the afternoon free. I'll do the bit check. You know, and there's these kids going to ride and there's Mark Todd checking their bit. I mean, I would have just about fallen off myself.
I think that's it's one of those points, isn't it? That actually anybody that competes, I personally believe if they can, then if they can give something back, because then they understand what it takes to make it work. And then when they are competing, they have that level of understanding of actually this happens for this reason. The USEA American Eventing Championships, which are presented by Neutrina Feeds, running at Kentucky Horse Park this year, broke records in 2019, Rob, over 1,000 entries. Now, we talk about organization and we talk about the manpower. In order to accommodate that sheer volume is remarkable in itself.
Yeah, we had just for that event, I mean, we had hundreds and hundreds of volunteers that stepped up to help out. And the sport absolutely would not exist without them. And we actually track through, we have a system called Eventing Volunteers, and it's eventingvolunteers.com. There's an app where we track people's hours. And those people who actually go through the effort to submit their hours, we knew last year alone, we had tens and tens of thousands of hours. This is basically free work, free labor committed by people who are just passionate about the sport. And for the AEC, it's no different. You know, if you think about if we had to hire 300 plus people to come and work throughout that week, because it really is a week full of competition, we couldn't make it go. It wouldn't happen. There's no chance. So one of the things that I always do try really hard to do when I'm at an event, anytime I see someone who's clearly volunteering time, is to thank them, you know. And I expect the same from our riders. I expect the same from anyone who's benefiting from their labor. It's, it's key. And yeah, the AC, it was a beast, I will say, in a positive way. I mean, it was enormous. I think we had running jokes about how big it would be, and I always take the conservative estimate because I have to be involved in the budget, and so I'd rather look good than be right. So yeah, at the end of the day, it was massive, and we're expecting it to be about the same this year.
It's incredible, and getting that many people together in one place. I think actually we've probably come up with an episode idea in itself there, and sort of behind the scenes and sort of what sort of roles people can get involved with it at their local event. I would just like to skip back a second. We were talking about youth eventing and championships, and the Intercollegiate Eventing Championships taking place at Chattahoochee Hills in Georgia, middle of May, 16th, 17th of May. Now, Auburn University have won it for the last 2 years. They are going for a hat trick in 2020. Max, do you think they can do it?
Why not? You know, they could definitely do it. I met the girls this year, the winners this year at the USDF meeting, and they were great. They were really passionate about being there and happy to be there. And what's been really cool is that it's, you know, for us, it's for the association, there was a gap that was a trending where the members were sort of at 18, they sort of dropped off, and then they picked back up again about 25 years old. And so with that, it was super, because we could, with the collegiate championships and the collegiate program, we've seen a much steadier membership level staying there, and these people really get into it. They have the best time. They have such a great time, and it keeps growing and growing. And I think Robbie was helping me out on this. I think there were 20 some odd teams last year, 28 teams. Am I making that up?
Yeah, 20 competing, and we've got over 30 like actual running university teams now.
Yeah. Nicole, I think that is one of the big episodes and the big things we have to cover this year, because imagine doing it three times. As we've kind of been looking across the year, like I was looking at Auburn eventing in terms of their team, their setup. You know, they've got a website there with all of the people who are involved. Like, everybody has a role: presidents, treasurers, social media managers. When we're talking about, firstly, on this podcast, you know, why we're doing the podcast and what we're hoping to achieve from it, I think this is a really critical piece, you know, that we're actually able to talk to all of the people who are essentially what makes up the USEA, critical part of what makes up the USEA, and shine a light on this. You know, if Auburn were to do it three times, that is such a big story. It's a much bigger story for most of the people involved in intercollegiate than who is going to come in the top five in Kentucky, or who makes high performance squad.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think we have to really work to make sure we keep the focus on. And that's what I would love to achieve with the podcast this year. Yeah. You know, it's so easy for us to talk about that top of the pyramid, but Rob, we talked about it over the winter, and you know, 75% of the runs in the USEA, about 30,000 runs every year, are beginner, novice, and training. Like, yep. I think that's where we've got to make sure that this year we really shine a light on, you know, what is it like?
Grassroots eventing, essentially.
Well, like, there's 10,000 horses in the USEA in 2019 competing, 7,000 riders. What I think Kentucky and Tokyo will bring is a focus on maybe 15 and eventually three. But we've got to make, like, I was looking at it earlier, like Abigail Mazzata, Woodstock's little Nev, finished on a score of 16.4 in the novice at Plantation Field. Best score at novice level in the USEA. I think what we will be doing this year, whether it's intercollegiate and interviewing some of the Auburn team as they go towards that, whether it's coming off the back of Plantation Field and we have people like Abigail on the show, I would love this to be, which I know is a a critical piece for us, Rob, is to take the podcast back to what the members, what they're really doing and what is really important to them. So I think intercollegiate is a really big part of that. I think all of the beginner novice, all of the novice, and all of the training is where we have to keep so much of our focus. That's what is important to so many more people than the 15 who are heading for Tokyo.
Yeah, you're dead on, Dee. It's, I mean, I our membership, our sport is the grassroots, are those, you know, folks at the beginner, novice, novice training levels. And intercollegiate is kind of my baby. I say that because it, when we started it, I was kind of at the beginning there trying to help it along. And so I'm really proud of it. And like you said, the students in that, in those programs, they make it work. What was the neatest thing about for us when the USCA committed to having intercollegiate eventing, we basically declared we're going to have intercollegiate eventing. And then the students kind of did most of the work and they continue to do most of the work. And we provide the platform and they run with it and they are our membership. So anything we can do to shine the light on them is important. I will say Auburn's going to have a really hard time though, because between Clemson, University of Kentucky, Texas A&M, there are some universities that are becoming kind of mini powerhouses. And you know, USC Aiken, there are some great programs that I don't know if they will three-peat. So I'll be the naysayer going into it.
I am fully backing them for three in a row. This is going to be good though. This is the story that one of the big stories that will follow, exactly like the AECs. I think we have to make sure we do the exact same, you know, in that journey from here all the way to end of August at Kentucky. So yeah, genuinely, that's the bit I'm looking forward to. I think for too long across eventing, I think you mentioned it, you know, in terms of the volunteers as well, Nicole, if you think how many people it takes to get on 10,000 horses running in the US last year, the pyramid gets bigger and bigger and bigger as you go down.
It's just an absolutely incredible army.
Yeah. But let's take the podcast back and the coverage back to that, because for so long, and this is, look, accreditings have been a big part of this. A lot of when we started, we were focused on, you know, Michael Young has won 2 Olympics and never added to his dressage score. It's great, but it's one person in the whole world. And when you think about the size of the pyramid, shining a light on what it actually takes to run an event, all of the people's stories who are all heading towards that event, any of us who've ever been involved with eventing will know that it's not just the person on the horse. You can hear the president of the USEA right now, you know, being part of the team that it takes to actually get someone around and out there competing. Like as we speak, that's our president doing that. So I think it's a really critical part that actually, you know, we're able to shine a light on the entire of the USEA rather than just the very top piece, which invariably we will too. Like, of course, Kentucky and of course, Tokyo are going to be massive parts of the coverage, but certainly not all of the coverage.
The best of both worlds. And I think that's probably a good point to say. Let us know what you want to see on this podcast. Listeners, if you've got any ideas, if you have any suggestions, if you've got any feedback, then we would love to hear from you. It is your chance to get involved. Send them in at US Eventing. Get involved in all of the social media coverage. And if you would like to have your say on a bigger level, then don't forget it is the USEA convention, which takes place the 10th through to the 13th of December in New Mexico. And I'm going to try and get this name right. It is Albuquerque. Is that right?
Albuquerque.
Well, kind of.
I like the way you said it, Nicole.
I can't. Yeah, I doubt I'd be able to say it the same way again. New Mexico, there's a USEA convention. But Rob, that actually is point. Anybody can go to that, can't they?
Area 10.
That's right.
It's
anyone can go. Anyone can register beforehand or on site. And we also have had a live stream. We continue to have, and we plan to have that. But really, you can't beat being there in person. And we had a massive one in Boston this past year. So hopefully we can echo those numbers in New Mexico.
New Mexico. And that is December 10th through to the 13th. So put that date in your diary as well. Now, we did say at the beginning of this show that we were going to have a very special guest for you, and we have. So Derm and I have caught up with a man who was crowned USEA Rider of the Year for the 4th time in a row, Boyd Martin. Welcome to the USEA official podcast.
How are you, Nicole? It's great to be on the show today.
Oh, we are delighted to have you with us. 4 years in a row, Boyd, that's a pretty impressive streak that you've got going there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a wonderful accomplishment, I say. I've got a large team of horses, and I'm going hard at the moment. So it's often the person that sort of rides the most events and wins the most classes. But there's probably equally as good or some better riders out there and better horses that have a smaller string. So it's a great thing to do, to be recognised here in America. But I think that FEI World Rankings is probably a more accurate list or ranking of the top riders in the country.
I wouldn't do yourself down. Last year, you took individual gold and team gold at the Pan American Games. You were second at Kentucky. I think those accomplishments sort of all come together. And
you're doing all right, yeah. You're doing all right.
Yeah, you're doing okay, basically. And we will put the pressure on and say, what about 2020?
2020 is looking good. I got a great group of horses. Got some new ones that have come in, and we sold and unloaded a few at the end of last year. And just getting them all fit. We've moved our operation to South Carolina, to a little town called Aiken. And we're gearing up, trying to get all the horses fit. And I've got to get healthy. I got injured a little bit at the end of last year. So I've just sort of got back to riding all day again. And it's exciting times. It's a big year of American eventing. And really looking forward to see what comes along.
Yeah, it's going to be. I mean, one of the things we've been talking about, Boyd, on the with Max and Rob has been about the feeling in the US, particularly around the high performance side, you know, of that positivity that's coming in just at the right time in advance of this big push for Tokyo. What's it like being around the program at the moment?
It's really good. I mean, I think Eric Devander's, he's a man on a mission at the moment. He's working about 7 days a week, and he's in Aiken one day, Ocala the next, and California. And he's really going hard. The American high performance list is quite large at the moment. There's some really, really good horses, top riders, and it's wide open. It's going to be a bit of a bustle to get on the team. There's only three horses and riders go to Tokyo, unlike past years where there's four, five, or six go. So it's I think the selectors are going to have to make some tough decisions, and it's going to require the right horse in form at the right moment and sound, and the timing's important and current form. So it's a exciting time. It's a nerve-wracking time, though, because you know that anything that goes wrong could screw things up pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. What's your plan looking like on the way to it in terms of events?
I've sort of got a group of horses that I think have a chance, and I'm going to take them down to Wellington next week and probably spin a few of them around the Wellington showcase event. That's a very short cross-country course. It's only 3 or 4 minutes, but an unbelievably very tense, pressurized dressage and show jumping round, and like I said, not a very hard long cross country, so that's always a good one to start them off, and then just slowly build them up towards Kentucky and Badminton. Probably my final run will be at Tryon at the Fork. That's always a great final build-up event as we gear them all up for the Land Rover Kentucky.
And actually, just on Wellington for a second, you've got a pretty good track history at Wellington. You have won it each time it's run, I think I'm right in saying.
It's a favourite one for me.
Which horse is going to win it this year for you?
I don't know. We'll see how we go. I've got old Long Island Tea dialed in at the moment. He's there's smoke coming off him. He's going really, really well, and I've got a syndicate that owns him. There's 10 members of Long Island Tea, and a lot of them actually live in Wellington, Florida. So now I took him there a couple of years ago and got eliminated in the show jumping. So I've assured the team that supports him that things are going to go a lot better this time. So touch wood, we perform a bit better than last time we attempted it.
Boyd, you mentioned Long Island Tea. That's probably a point. One of the things that I wanted to talk to you about was one of the sad losses of the off-season, and Steve Blauner. He was involved with Long Island Tea over the years, along with, you know, a huge list of your horses, all the way from Neville Bardos, all the way through Shamwari, Blackfoot Mystery, Ray Price. You know, there's a huge list that he's been alongside you. That must have been a big blow for the team in the off season.
Yeah, it was terrible. You know, it was just, just one of those people that come into your life and just change the course of your career. You know, I met Steve probably 10 years ago when I was just starting out here in America, and I met him at a clinic, and he loved a beer, and I ended up having a beer with him at every clinic, and before you know it, he was sort of lending me the money to buy those top horses you were talking about. Mm-hmm. And just a guy that he loved just helping out the up-and-comer, and it was a crushing news when we heard he passed away, because he wasn't just helping me, he was helping some other top upper-level riders, and then had a wonderful program for the younger riders coming through in America, and it was just a truly tragic loss. I mean, he was just a top guy, and just he had a heart of gold, and it's very, very sad to lose Steve just because he just was so generous.
Yeah, there's been great reporting, you know, of all of what Steve has done after being such a huge part of, as you say, particularly the younger riders, and all of the work he's done with USEA Foundation as well to bring people through. So one of the things I noted when you talked about it at that time, you know, I think it was on your Facebook or on your website, and you talked about missing him at Kentucky, where you'd always have a vodka and grapefruit. You'll be back at Kentucky, of course, this year, I expect. Will you, I presume?
Yeah, I mean, Kentucky is one of the greatest events in America. It's you know, by far the probably the focus of our year. Well, now that we've got Fair Hill at the end of the year, it's definitely the focus of the first half of the year. It's one of those premier events. It's highly contested. The horses and riders from all over the world come to compete there. There's massive crowds. And it's sort of watched now that with the technology of live streaming and the NBC coverage, you know, your friends and family in Australia are waking up in the middle of the night to watch it. And it's one of those events that's just massive. And it's highlighted in my calendar every year as to try and go as well as I can.
One better than last year in 2020?
I need to do like a Nancy Kerrigan on Oliver Townsend or something with a crowbar. I think it was. We went close last year, and I got that little horse humming along Cesper Leg again. So he's going better than ever. So I think I've got a good chance again to be right in there come Sunday in April.
And just while we're on, you know, general things that we can jinx you on,
that is not the plan for this podcast.
No, it's not the plan, but you know, that's what people will say. But Boyd, you're number 7 in the world at the moment. You are in between Lauren Kiefer and Michael Young. You're ahead of Michael Young. The second 5-star in the US is a big opportunity for points. Is the world ranking something you mentioned him earlier? Is it something that you'll be keeping a close eye on? Is it something that you sit back and just let it pan out how it pans out and check at the end of the year, check as you go through the year? Or have you got a target around that? I mean, looking at it here, I would say, you know, top 3, even higher in the world is not an unrealistic 2020 target. You've got a championship year, which you get your points and a half, and you've got 2 5-stars in the US. I think it's really set up for a US rider to really make a big challenge at that world number one spot.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're dead on the mark there. I think that obviously representing the country is huge, but that sort of comes from a top performance at Kentucky. But, you know, you're dead on the mark there. My goal would be to be trying to get in the top 3 of the FEI world rankings. And like you said, with Fair Hill now in October, I think American riders have that opportunity to take a couple of horses to 2 5-stars here in North America, and then if you've got any more with that, you can maybe take one to the Games or Burley or something like that. So, and I'm tooled up a bit at the moment. I've got a couple of the old horses like Blackfoot Mystery back in work, and then I've got a couple of new ones coming through for their first 4-star and hopefully 3 or 4 5-star horses. So if all goes well, I could be the champion of the world, but as we know with eventing, I could crash and burn, be a miserable year. So
I'd stick with the first. Stick with the first one, Boyd. Stick with that one. Yeah.
It's going to depend on a big start, if you're wondering, because a lot of your counting points at the moment are coming from, well, one of them from that Setzer leg win Tryon. So you've got also, obviously, the Kentucky result. So it kind of depends on, you're going to lose some points earlier in the season. So for your own information, it's likely that, dependent on those early results, you're likely to drop down a little bit, probably into the mid-teens in April. And then you've got all of your big ones to come later in the season. You're going to hold on to your points from Bromont into June. And then you've still got that Pan Am result, which is going to be a big counting score. So they'll probably drop down a little bit based on, you know, March, April. And then unless you obviously go and win those, in which case you'll retain your position. But I think probably drop down a little bit with them with a big push kind of midsummer would be the target.
All right. Well, that sounds like a plan.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Come back on and we'll discuss the plan.
And suicidal if I drop down to the mid-teens.
Exactly.
Now that I understand how it all works, I really didn't have a very clear understanding of how that all works.
So. We will get you back on, Boyd, when you make that. Well, we'll get you back on anyway, but especially when you make the climb back up into the top three. We could talk to you for absolutely ages because there is so much we want to talk to you about. But just one point before we do go, and that would be, you mentioned obviously friends and family watching back in Australia. It's been a really, really tough time over the sort of the last few months with all of the bushfires. The equestrian community have pulled together, including in the US, which must be incredibly heartwarming.
Yeah, I mean, I had a terrible experience with fire a couple of years ago, and it's just one of those horrific things that you're absolutely helpless in, you know, and it doesn't matter what you do, you just can't control it. And obviously, I mean, talking to my friends and family in Australia, and the bushfires have just been horrendous. So, I mean, I was there visiting my mum in November, and it was just smog and smoke everywhere, and that was actually the best of it. You know, it got worse and worse in December and in the beginning of January. It was just a horrible, horrible thing. But it's amazing the support that, and, you know, I think everyone loves, obviously, animals, especially horses, and it's been cool to see how many people from different corners of the world have all pitched in to help the Australians out. And they're a resilient bunch, those Aussies, and as terrible as it seems, I'm sure they'll pick themselves up and bounce back. It will take a long time, though, to restore everything to where it once was.
It absolutely will. Boyd, thank you for coming on the USEA official podcast. We have loved having you on. We will be following your progress with much interest in 2020 and to see if you can make it 5 years on the trot as the leading rider of the year.
All right, let's get to it.
Get to it. Boyd, thank you so much for joining us. It has been a pleasure as always.
Thanks, Boyd.
Thank you, guys. Cheers. Good luck.
Well, I have to admit, I have thoroughly enjoyed this first refreshed episode, my first chance to host the USEA official podcast, and I'm very much looking forward to what is going to be a brilliant 2020. Rob, Max, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you guys so much, and thank you for putting up with me sort of doing two things at once.
Not at all. As I say, your multitasking skills are way beyond me. You've got to go and do some braids, leg your rider up over
exactly.
in Wellington.
Exactly.
Thank you for joining us, Rob. Thank you as well. It's exciting times.
Thanks, guys. This is exciting. I'm going to say the word exciting way too many times.
You know what? Yes, it's okay. We might have to look up a thesaurus.
You'll be in good company. We're going to be back. I think in terms of when we're on the call, we're going to try to release an episode every Monday. Well, we are going to release an episode.
Every second Monday. Is generally speaking the first and the third Mondays of every month. I think there's a bit where the months get funny in the middle of the summer, but twice a month on a Monday, it will be waiting for you as you wake up. You can listen to it while you have your morning coffee, while you do morning stables, whatever it is. And let us know if you're listening, tag us at US Eventing. Let us know, share it, like it, subscribe, comment, basically as much engagement as you like, because we want to hear from you. But thank you very much for listening. Rob, Max, Derm, it has been a pleasure as always. And we'll be back very soon with the next episode. It'll be number 251, of the USEA official podcast. Thanks for listening to the USEA official podcast. If you have any suggestions or feedback, then we would love to hear from you. Get in touch through any of our social media platforms at US Eventing, and don't forget to subscribe on your preferred podcast platform to make sure you don't miss an episode.